And I think that that's the way that a lot of entrepreneurs perceive themselves is, I am Superman, I am the hero. And I will tell you, as long as that is how you identify, you will always be trapped, because your goal as an entrepreneur should be eventually to become the least important person in your business. And as long as you are the most valuable, your business never truly will be, and you'll never be free.
Do you own your own business, or does your business own you? That is what we're going to be talking about today with my guest, the one and only Ryan Dice. Ryan is a serial entrepreneur. He's an author and investor. And according to Shark Tank's star, Damon John, his companies practically own the internet. If you've never heard of Ryan, he is the founder and CEO of The Scalable Company. You can find him over at scalable.co, that's C-O. And just a tip, there's no E in Scalable. If you try and type in Scalable with an E, it will not work. So we'll have links to that in the show notes, but scalable.co. He's also the founder of digitalmarketer.com and a founding partner of Scalable Equity LLC, which is an equity accelerator that builds, acquires, and invests in B2B media services and software brands. Now, if you've been in the digital marketing world for any period of time, you would have heard of a little event, just a small one, called Traffic and Conversion Summit. It's the largest digital marketing conference in North America, and he once did come to Australia and run it here. I attended. He quite literally wrote the book on digital marketing. Digital Marketing for Dummies book is available on Amazon. He's a sought-after speaker. He's been on stages with Richard Branson, Gary Vaynerchuk, Sarah Blakely, Martha Stewart, Tim Ferriss, Damon John, Dave Ramsey. But what I want to say is, you, dude, you're really genuine and a humble guy. You joined a mastermind that, you know, we're both in a similar mastermind. And for most of us in the mastermind, you are someone we had learned from. You know, we attended your events. We actively sought your insights and knowledge. And then you join this mastermind and you are so generously giving of things like, hey, here's this thing I've just figured out. Here's the stuff. Or, hey, like, I've got this training thing, but let me, you know, I want to help out the mastermind. And not only that, though, the humbleness is that you're still an avid learner. There are some people, myself included, in that group, where we kind of still put our face of, I've got my shit together. And even though there might be a question we want to ask, we might ask it in person to a few people, but we're not going to just go to the whole group and go, hey, here's my question. Whereas you, Ryan, I really appreciate that you just ask. You're like, hey, I'm trying to figure this thing out. Has anyone got a resource? Or, hey, like, I just went through the training. What's this about? Like that, in my experience, that's a rare thing. So Ryan Dice, welcome to the show. Great to have you, dude. And yeah, I just wanted to share that with you.
Yeah, thank you. It's a 20 plus year long con that I'm running. So it's all a big scam. And at one point, I'm going to pull the rug out from everybody and take you guys for some. Now, it's I do appreciate the kind words. I really do. I can tell you, so many people are afraid of looking stupid, and that's why they don't want to ask the quote unquote stupid question. I've been publicly humiliated so many times now, and have come out the other end and realized that nobody actually cared. It's fine. Like, the world kept spinning and I kept moving, and people were so gracious and forgiving. And so, like, yeah, I've been there too. And so I've been the beneficiary of so much grace from so many other people when I've fallen down, that I now don't have any issues or challenges whatsoever admitting, like, I don't know what the heck I'm doing here. But I am really clear on what I'm good at. Like, I know the things that I'm good at, and I'm happy to own those. And so I think it's easy to be humble in some areas if I can be strategically arrogant in others. And maybe that's the balance that I've tried to figure out how to strike.
I really like that. Strategically arrogant in some areas, but then humble in all others. That's really cool. You wouldn't remember this. I'm sure of it. You wouldn't remember this, but we actually first met at TNC Sydney. I think that was 2014, 2015. I don't know if you even remember coming to Sydney and running a Traffic and Conversion Summit.
Oh, 1,000%. I remember being in Sydney. It was great. I don't remember the year though. So many of those years, they just blend together. It's like there was this 100%. Time before COVID, and then there's this like BC, and then like after COVID, AC. So yes, but I definitely remember that. And it was an exciting time because the digital marketer brand was really expanding, and we were really serious about going where our people were. And so we wanted to be able to you know, come over to Sydney. We wanted to be able to go to Europe, to the UK and Europe. We wanted to go to South America. I just think I believed then and I believe now that not enough brands are willing to go and press the flesh face to face with their people. So yeah, absolutely remember it.
Yeah. And it was great. So I have a company called Automation Agency, and I'd only kind of just founded it around that time. And so you were launching something, and I came up to you. I was very nervous, and I was like, oh, you know, I'm thinking of doing your program, but I don't know if that's going to work for my agency. And it was a great interaction. As I said, you would not remember it, but that was our first ever conversation. And then it's like, we had a number of world crossing moments. You showed up at a party at a Lead Pages conference in Andrew Warner's hotel room. I could not tell you what the year it was, but I remember you showed up there and we had a brief conversation at that. We also were both speakers at an Entreport conference in Santa Barbara one year. We were at opposite ends of the table though at dinner, so we didn't chat there. You were with Marcus Murphy at the time. So we had like all these little interactions. So I'm excited that we finally get to have a deep dive conversation after, what, 10 years of being crossing ships in a way.
Yeah. And it's tough. I'll tell you, for me, and I don't know if this is how you are as well, I'm an introvert. And so when I go to these events, it's tough. Like speaking is easy, but going and like networking and meeting people, man, it's really, really hard for me. And so I kind of have to like turn off certain aspects of me and like turn on certain aspects of me. And if I don't already know the people. And so, you mentioned Marcus was our, at the time, our head of sales and partnerships. And it was great because Marcus, he walks into a room and he's like, yay, new friends. I walk into a room and I'm like, oh, get me the hell out of here. And so Marcus would do all the talking for me. And so I could just kind of sit there and like wave casually at people.
But it's so, our mutual friend, Taki. Like so many people in my world, he's made those friends. And then he'd be like, hey, meet Carl. Carl's amazing. So we need the extroverted people in our lives, right?
To keep that. Love them.
So there, you've done a lot in your journey. And you've got, from memory, 4 kids. Just before we hit record, you said one of them's even going off to college/university this weekend.
Yeah.
I'm curious, before we dig into all the business stuff, how have you navigated being a dad and a business owner?
At times very poorly. So I've got 4 kids as we're recording this, ages 12, 14, 16, and 18. And my oldest daughter, who's now 16, I don't really remember the first 2 years of her life. So if I were to go back 14 years ago, that season of life and that season of business, I was working so hard that, I truly don't remember it. I go back and look at pictures, I was there. I mean, I was at different things. It's not that I was completely absent, but I wasn't there, mentally and emotionally. Now, my kids were very young, right? My youngest daughter at the time would have been, a year or two. My oldest son was 3 or 4. Let's be candid. Like they're more interested in mom than they are dad. And so, but it was a pattern in my life that was not good at that time. Now, that was a particularly busy season. Came out of that, things got good, got a little bit, more in an overflow. But I had another really, really difficult stint where I was leaving for the office before anybody was awake. I was getting home after everybody was asleep. I remember 2016, I had 3 different companies in our portfolio group. All 3 of them hit the Inc. 500 or 5,000 list of the fastest growing companies in North America, right? So a big achievement by any stretch. And even now, when I get introduced sometimes to speak, I'll be introduced as a multi, Inc. 500 founder, which is true, but I don't usually brag about it because that year, I barely saw my family. I barely saw my kids. Now, again, I was generally at the really important things, but I missed most family dinners. I missed soccer practices and dance recitals and things like that. And it really wasn't until, I remember coming home late, well after midnight, tiptoeing through my home and rounding the corner of my master bedroom, seeing the light was still on in my room and thinking, this isn't good, and walking in and my wife was sitting up there in bed and she said, look, I know who I married. I know who I married. I know who you are. I fell in love with you because you were ambitious and because you wanted more. But this is too much. And you can keep doing what you're doing, but you can't pretend like you're doing it for us anymore. And I remember those words just pierced me, man. I mean, they just crushed me. And so I would be an absolute fraud if I sat here and said that, no, yeah, I basically bounced it off, crushing it. I feel really, really great about the last, 7 or 8 years. I mean, I really do feel like the last 7 or 8 years, and we can get in, like, it has a happy ending. You know, my wife held up a mirror and was like, do you like what you see? And I had to admit, no, I don't. I don't like this. This isn't what I wanted. This isn't worth it, right? It's not worth it. And I was telling myself that I was doing it for them. And I think a lot of dads, I think a lot of entrepreneurs, fathers in particular, we allow ourselves to believe that we can make certain sacrifices and we're doing it for our family. But what we fail to realize is we're actually sacrificing our family at the altar of scale and success. And for me, that's what I was doing. And I had to come to grips with that. And I wasn't doing it for them. I was doing it in pursuit of my own ego. I was doing it in pursuit of this thing that I thought was important. And I'd lost my way because I'd lost my why. And so, yeah, so again, that's why you asked the question poorly, ups and downs, but I've now been a dad for almost 2 decades. And so there's times when I feel like I've done well, and there's times when I feel like I haven't. I'd be lying if I said that I had no regrets about certain times, but I still look back and, my kids know they're loved. I've got a phenomenal relationship with all my children, an amazing marriage, love my wife, love my kids. I mean, you and I, you're like, what, do you have a hard stop? I was like, a little bit. I've got to leave this time and make it home for dinner, because I now make dinners. Like, I don't miss those. So
yeah,
long-winded answer to a simple question, but there you go. We can take it any direction you want.
No, there's so many important things in what you said there, because it's very true. Many men with families will tell themselves, I'm putting in the hard yards to provide, right? Like, I'm working these long hours. They tell themselves that I'm doing this for them. And then, sadly for many, they get shocked when all of a sudden the wife is like, I'm leaving. It's like, but wait, I'm providing, I'm doing everything right.
Yeah.
It's like, well, it's a bit more than just financial provision. Are you actually showing up?
Yeah.
Are you making them feel seen and connected? I'm curious, you said the last 7 or 8 years you feel really proud of. What do you think specifically you've done differently? Do you know, or is it intentional? I'm assuming it's intentional.
Yeah, it is intentional. And the first thing was just making a decision that it was going to be different. And that happened. Well, look, when my wife first said that phrase to me, it crushed me. I was hurt. I was embarrassed, and I got defensive at first, but my wife and I have an agreement, and it is go to bed angry. A lot of people say, never let the sun set in your anger. Never. We're like, go to bed angry. I think go to bed angry is the ultimate sign of commitment, because go to bed angry is basically saying, I'm really pissed off at you right now, but I still love you and I'm still committed to you and I'll be here tomorrow. And so we can continue this fight tomorrow, because neither of us are going anywhere. And so I went to bed that night and I woke up the next morning. I remember I didn't sleep well. I woke up very, very early and I realized she's right and I need to make some changes. And one of the things that I believe, and marketing has taught me this, people show commitment in two ways. We show commitment with our wallets and we show commitment with our calendars. Now, with the family, they had my full wallet commitment. Everything I made, I brought back to the family. It's not like I had a side bank account where I was buying, Ferraris out of or anything like that, right? I mean, I wanted to earn so that we could go on vacations as family. So kids go to private school, all the things, right? So they got my money, but I forgot about the calendar part. And I really do think it's both. For the things you're truly committed to, they get both your wallet and they get your calendar. They get both your money and they get your time. And if you're simply willing to, as a high net worth, high income person, give your money, I think it's less a sign of commitment than your time is, right? It's a lot easier for me to donate to a charity than it is for me to show up and actually give of my time. And so that was the case with my family. So I knew where the change needed to take place was in my calendar. And so the first practical thing that I did is I said to my wife, I said, okay, you get first dibs. Let's look out at the calendar for the next 12 to 18 months. Now there's certain things we've got events and commitments. I can't really change those. We've got contracts, but beyond that, let's put when we're going to go on vacation as a family. Let's put when you and I are going to have trips. And so the very first thing I did, and my wife and I have repeated this process ever since then, twice a year. It's at the end of every year. So every December between Christmas and New Year's, we go away as a family. We have a beach house on the Texas coast. And for a couple of those days, it's just my wife and I. We wake up in the morning, we grab coffee and we sit up in bed and we sort of think out the next year. And in that time, she gets first dibs on the calendar before we've planned, any of when are the company meetings, any of the anything. She gets to go first and she gets to block off those times. And then we repeat it again over the summer and we look out again for another 12 months. So we're always kind of planning 12 months in advance. So that was the first big change that we made on the macro scale. And one thing that I implemented is now every summer I take a 30-day vacation. I wasn't always able to do this, but I set it as a goal. I want to be able to take 30 days, four consecutive weeks off. And I want to just be gone. I want to be gone completely, where I'm focused on, you know, focused on my family. And I've repeated that process now for the past five summers. This summer was a little bit interrupted. Because my son had like a we had planned it, and then the school that he got into had an orientation, so we kind of had to break our family. But it was because of a kid thing that we had to break it in half. So I get a pass on that one. We technically had two breaks instead of a continuous, you know, break. But yeah, sorry, what were you going to say?
No, I was just going to say, like, you know, there's an important part there that I want to make sure listeners and viewers don't miss was you wanted to be able to disconnect completely. And what I'm curious to know is, in that period of time, what does disconnect completely not include?
So definitely no meetings in general. So the last, not this summer, but the two summers before, we went to Europe and I didn't take my laptop. You know, I took an iPad, but that's mostly like for reading and things like that. So I certainly wasn't going to be in any scheduled meetings. I wasn't going to take any Zoom calls. I would check my email because I get newsletters and things like that that I read, but there was no expectation that I was going to reply. My assistant was in my inbox. And so she could say like, hey, Ryan's on vacation and, you know, Ryan's out until this date. I'll make sure he sees it when he gets back. If it's an emergency, let me know. And there are people at the company who that could be forwarded on to. My business partners could absolutely, you know, text me, call me. If there was like an emergency 911 situation at the company, I wasn't going to like be that, you know, dogmatic about it. But in general, yeah, I was off. I was on vacation. It was the same that I had the same expectation for myself that my employees would have. You know, if somebody who works for me, they go on vacation, we don't have an expectation that they're going to be in meetings. We don't have an expectation that they're going to be active in, you know, in our company Slack or that they're going to respond to emails. They're on freaking vacation. And so I just gave myself the same grace and opportunity that I would, you know, to take a break that I would give my team. And I'll tell you, I need that. It's sort of like a fast. And for the first week, I'm a little bit twitchy. So I kind of have to start weaning myself off. The week before I leave, I stop going to any meetings. So I opt out any, and I'm in very few meetings at this point anyway, but I opt out of any meetings. I start, you know, I'm not active in any projects. So I kind of find myself winding down. And then when I come back, same thing, I take 4 weeks off, but I tell everybody I'm gone for five. So that next week I'm back, I kind of can ease back in. I'm not in any meetings that next week. So it's really kind of 6 weeks. There's sort of like a week buffer before and a week buffer after so that I can, because I found it took me about a week to get into the zone and then 2 weeks of really loving it. And then a week of sort of dreading that I was going to have to start back up again. So that's kind of how we do it. But yeah, I mean, I'm not working. I allow myself to read. I allow myself to think about business because I love what I do and it's fun for me. But I don't go in with while I'm gone, I'm going to do this work or do this project. Yeah. To me, vacation time is not special project time. To me, vacation time is there's no expectation of output whatsoever.
Yeah, I think that's a really important thing. You know, it's a real issue, and this is probably a good segue into talking a bit more about what you're doing at Scalable, because so many service-based businesses in particular, but really any business owner, they get stuck often doing the do. And the idea of holidays, a number of guys I talk to, that the idea of even 1 or 2 weeks off their business without a laptop is crazy. You know, they can't imagine it. And your longtime listeners will know that I took 8 months off in 2019 in my business. Took away, disappeared nice. For 8 months, right? Like
you win.
I just disappear. I had a relationship breakdown that kind of was the trigger, but I just was like, I'm out of here. No meetings, no Slack, nothing.
Yeah.
And when I came back, like, sure, some stuff broke, but you realize you're not as important as you think you are. And I think it's an amazing, amazing thing to be able to, you know, I'm not saying everyone should be able to take 8 months off, but even just as you said, a couple of weeks, start with a couple of weeks, then get to 4 weeks, then, you know, go longer. So let's talk a little bit about Scalable. and what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because you are helping business owners get out of the fact that their business is owning them. So give us like the 30-second snapshot and let's dive in.
Sure. Scalable is not a company that I plan to start, but what I realized is that there were a lot of entrepreneurs out there like me. And sort of the purpose of Scalable is we help entrepreneurs install operating systems in their business so their businesses can scale without them. It really is as simple as that. And there's a lot of companies who say, who do certain versions of what we do. I'm not going to pretend like we invented this entire category. Plenty have gone before us. I'm sure plenty, you know, will have gone after. But when I looked back and you know, COVID, I think was an interesting time for a lot of businesses because there was this pause. We sort of had an opportunity to really look around. And a lot of us got the opportunity to look around and say, what all do I want to be doing? And it was particularly interesting timing for me because in 2018 and 2019, we had exited the vast majority of our portfolio of businesses. I've always been a serial entrepreneur. I've always run multiple companies. It's, call it my entrepreneurial ADHD. I don't know. I've just always had a difficult time only ever doing one thing. And maybe I'd be a lot wealthier if I had focused. It's just not how I work. It's not what I want to do. I like having partners. I like having a stake in different businesses. It's fun to play in a lot of different sandboxes. But, you know, these businesses have a life cycle to them. And so I don't necessarily want to run a company into perpetuity. And so we build them up to a certain point and then we exit them. And it just so happened that we exited the majority of our portfolio in 2018 and 2019, which was kind of good timing in a lot of cases, especially since one of those businesses was the event that you mentioned before, Traffic and Conversion Summit. We still own 20% of it, still heavily involved in the goings on of that business, but exited that, you know, just before COVID. And so here I'm sitting in 2020 with very little to do. I'm sitting on a good bit of cash. I'm sitting on a tremendous amount of time. And the only business that I had was Digital Marketer. And I never really wanted to sell Digital Marketer because it was a good platform business. It created opportunities for other, you know, deal flow and things like that. But I think, what do I want to do next? And, you know, when I looked at what I have, like what we had created was a tremendous number of resources and assets around how we build operating systems and businesses our way. Because I've had to run in that we have multiple companies. I can't do everything. I can't be everywhere all at once. We've had to build certain systems. And I realized there's a tremendous amount of value here. And so I started helping out, you know, my friends and fellow entrepreneurs. And they're like, this is amazing. You should share this. And so that was where the idea of Scalable came about. And it started out as a passion project and something for me to do during COVID. And it ballooned into a real live business, as they so often do. I mean, most of us who are out there listening to this, we're all accidental entrepreneurs. Most of us didn't actually intentionally get into what we're doing today. We sort of stumbled and fumbled our way into it. And it was the same thing with the Scalable company. Now, strategically, what it winds up being is a great source of deal flow. Because again, we like to invest in companies and, you know, do that kind of thing. But I can do this for the rest of my life because it really is, you know, my passion. I love systems, but mostly I just love entrepreneurs. And I want entrepreneurs to not get to the point where I was at in 2016, because they may not have a partner that is as patient and understanding as mine was. At no point did my wife ever threaten divorce. At no point. She just simply said, you can keep doing it. You just can't pretend like you're doing it for us anymore. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, she just took the why from me, which is what I needed. Not everybody's partner is quite that patient understanding. So and they shouldn't have to be, you know. So I want at Scalable to share with entrepreneurs all the things that we figured out and we built since 2016 so that people don't have to have a 2016 like I had in 2016, where you're successful on the outside, looks like you're crushing life, but you're absolutely freaking miserable. So yeah, that's kind of the mission purpose behind Scalable. And I'll tell you, to what you said before, one of our overarching beliefs is the more valuable you are to your business, the less valuable your business is.
Yeah.
And so at Scalable, I found that there are some entrepreneurs who they're doing this for wealth. They do want to create wealth. There's some that are doing it for impact, but really they wouldn't do it the impact thing if the wealth weren't there. So really, come on, let's be honest, you're probably doing it for the money as well. But there are some entrepreneurs who they're really doing it for the significance. Mm-hmm. The significance of, I want to be important. I want to be important in my industry. I want to be important to the customers and to clients. I want to be important to my team. I want to be the person that can swoop in and, you know, and save the day. I don't know if you're going to make this video available, but like, you've got a Superman poster behind you. And I think that that's the way that a lot of entrepreneurs perceive themselves, is I am Superman. I am the hero. And I will tell you, as long as that is how you identify, you will always be trapped, because your goal as an entrepreneur should be eventually to become the least important person in your business. And as long as you are the most valuable, your business never truly will be, and you'll never be free. So that's kind of the first mindset shift that people need to make. And for us at the Scalable Company, unless somebody's nods their head at the statement I just made before, and they're okay with it being quote unquote less valuable to the business, so the business can be more valuable, we probably can't work with them. If they agree to that though, then we almost certainly can.
I love how you broke it into those categories, and you're so right. Like, impact's a beautiful thing, but if I look at even my own history, and I'm sure you'd be the same, when I've started things that were passion projects, at a certain point, if they're not financially viable and worth giving some form of return on time, no matter how much you're loving the impact, I usually end up going, okay, this is not quite working. Let's find another way to make money and make impact. So, you know, impact's a beautiful thing, but we live in a world that is run on money.
Yeah. And every business makes an impact. Like, you're getting paid. If you're running a business, somebody's giving you money. They're only going to do that over a period of time is if you're delivering value over and above what you're getting in exchange. That's called impact. Okay. So let's not overly like spiritualize this. Okay. The person who's selling, you know, snow cones on the corner on a hot summer day to kids who are really excited is making an impact. Now you could be like, oh, but like, you know, these big companies like Google and Apple and like they're making it even bigger. Fine. But like, I don't want to get into an argument of like, my impact is more impactful than your impact. That's stupid. That's like, this charity is better than that charity. Like, screw you, man. Like if people are delivering value over and above what they're taking, then they are a positive force on this planet and they deserve to be celebrated. So every business that exists for an extended period of time is doing that. Because at some point, if you take more than you give, you will go out of business, period. You will, right? All these frauds, they eventually get figured out. So if you got a business, you're checking the impact box. So that's an output. I don't actually think it's a pure, it should drive you. But at the end of the day, like where it's going to show up is money. But if significance is critical to you, and if you derive your significance from business, you will always be trapped and you will always be owned by that business because that's what's captivating you. Therefore, it's what's holding you captive.
So it's so true. What you're saying resonates so hard. And I want to add in one component around impact in your business, no matter what you do. I speak to a lot of people, possibly you do too, where they like being small and there's nothing wrong with a small business, one or two man business, but often dig a bit deeper. You know, why don't you want to put team? And it's like, oh, well, that's the headaches and the stress and the drama of big teams. It's like, but that's impact. You know, the more people you're putting food on their table, you're impacting not just them, but their families, their kids. So you're impacting the client. But if you actually build a team and it's not a business just of you, your impact is growing no matter what it is your business does. And so significance, it sounds like you're a big believer that the significance of the owner in particular, their need for significance through the business is a big trap.
It's a giant trap. And especially if you have a family. And if my identity right now is first and foremost, well, I'm a Jesus follower. You know, I believe in God. That is first and foremost. That is unlikely to change, right? I mean, certainly, I guess, you know, something, whatever, somebody comes down and like, it's like, you got it wrong. I'm the real God. It's like, oh crap. You know, but like barring something like that, like, that's there, that's relatively fixed, and it's fixed for life. Down below that is I'm a husband, right? And I'm going to be that until I die or my wife dies, right? And so that is an aspect of my identity that should, God willing, persist throughout the bulk of my life. You know, my goal is definitely to die first. Like, that's really important to me that I go first because I don't want to be without her. So she'll figure it out. She's much smarter and wiser than I am and well, better adjusted emotionally. Down from that, my identity is father. Now, the father is, I'll always be a dad, but it does change. And those who have had kids that have gotten older, like what it means to be a dad does fundamentally change. And there is going to come a time where my kids grow and they leave and they start their own family. And so my identity of father, it's not that I'm no longer a dad or less of a dad, but it's definitely changed. But for right now and in this season, I need to be all in on dad because this particular season is fleeting. And I've watched how fast it happened, man. 18-year-old in a couple of days, I'm about to drop him off university. Like he's on his own. I remember when he was a little bitty baby, right? I've seen how fast that is. So right now in my life, the identity that matters most is dad identity, right? Like that's the one that I'm really holding on to. And then I want to make sure that I'm prioritizing, certainly not above my faith and not above my marriage, but definitely about business. And so if your identity and if your, you know, your significance comes from your business, one of those other areas of life is going to falter. And if you're listening to a podcast about being a dadpreneur, you got to know it's the dad one that's probably going to go. So I would just discourage anyone from deriving too much significance and identity from their business. It's the work that you do. It's important. It's an aspect of your identity, but it shouldn't dominate all of the other ones.
Ah, dude, so good. There's something in there that I want to pick up on and dive a little deeper and make sure it's called out. The fact that being a dad is underneath marriage. There are many couples that I see where, and my wife and I did the same thing. We made it very clear when we found out we were pregnant. It's like, we need to ensure marriage relationship is our priority. We love our kids. They're a priority to us, but we can't let that, you know, we get so lost in the identity of we've become parents that we've lost the coupleship.
Yeah.
Like how have you navigated that? Like, has it always just been super easy or have there been times that it's been a struggle?
It's been easy for my wife and I because we've both been aligned on it. And we both agreed that like, yes, our marriage is, you know, is more important than like my wife is more important to me than my children. Now that's not a popular thing to say. I think it happens to be accurate, right? Because again, it is my job. It's our job as parents to raise adults, not kids. And so if we do our job right, they will leave, right? They'll leave. They're going to go and they're going to start their own families. And I want at that point for their spouse, their partner in life to be the most important person in their life, not me. And so this is the process that we undergo. My wife and I were together before the kids and we'll be together after. So that is a relationship that's going to persist, which is why it should be prioritized. So how does that manifest itself? I mentioned before, it comes down to your calendar. And so I gave my wife first dibs on when we're going to do the big vacations. So we do a big family vacation, but we make sure that we also have us vacations. So we are going to go on multiple trips, just the two of us. Now, when the kids were really, really little and we couldn't be gone as long, it might just be a weekend, you know, but we would make sure that we went on us trips. And I do remember, especially when they were little, kids would be upset, like, oh, you're leaving. And they'd cry. And a lot of parents would. And I said, you don't understand this now, but it's really good that your mom and I are going away. We love you. We're going to come back. But we also love each other. And we need this time for ourselves. And when they were little babies, toddlers, they didn't always understand it. And now they do. And now they're like, yeah, bye. We get it. And they understand. So it's calendar. It also is date nights. When the kids were little, we were religious. We had a Thursday night date night every single Thursday. That was just one of those things. She got dibs on the calendar, the macro, and on the micro. So we zoomed down to the week level. When are we going to have date nights? Okay. You know, now, are there times when there are events and they ran over on a Thursday and so we didn't? Yep. But then it just got moved to another date. So we were going to make sure every week we had a date night. Candidly, as the kids have gotten older, it's gotten harder because they have so many dang activities that we want to make sure we go to. But we make sure that it doesn't go more than a couple of weeks where we do go on a date night and prioritize, you know, each other. So yeah, I mean, it's the same answer, but it really does come down to your calendar. And you want to make sure that when you look at your calendar, you have family time, but that you also have, you know, partner time, spouse time. Because if that's not on the calendar either, the calendar is going to be a reflection of your commitment. If it's all work and no family, that's bad. If it's all work and just kid stuff, but no marriage stuff, that's also not ideal. So we just want to make sure that you have a balance. And again, it'll show up on your calendar.
Star. My date night is Thursday night as well. So it's completely the same.
I love Thursday.
Every Thursday.
Weekends are tough. Thursday was great. Like it was towards the end of the week. It like set up Friday really well. And then the weekend. And sometimes, you know, we'd have our Thursday and then something, there'd be another thing on the weekend. We get like two date nights in a week. It's great. Great.
Yeah,
highly recommend
it. Yeah. Picking a day, I think there's so much value in what you've said and so much practicality. And then you know, you've talked about calendar side of things. I'm curious. I've heard like, you know, Dan Martell, for example, has shared the idea of cash flow when your relationship is like, are you investing in therapy? Are you going to relationship courses? Is that something that you guys do as well, or you're more, it's more about the time?
We haven't done couples therapy or anything like that. My wife and I are both solid communicators. And, you know, we got married the weekend after we graduated university. So we've been together for a long time and we've grown up together. I mean, the reason I started my company was because I met her. We went on a few dates and I decided right then and there that this is the woman I'm probably going to marry. I didn't tell her that because I knew that would be creepy, would freak her out. But I was like, I don't have any money. I'm at some point going to need to buy this woman a ring. I should make some extra income. That's why I started my business. And so I think it's a little bit different for us. And I'm not saying that like that we never should have done therapy, but we've always been able to kind of work things out. I think therapy is a great thing. I also think that there are some people who become a little bit too dependent upon therapy to where it doesn't necessarily fix anything. It's just yep. like the therapy is the end in and of itself. And so I really like therapists, and I've known many. I've had friends and have, you know, walked with couples who are going through tough times, and they had therapists as well, where the therapist took the approach of the outcome should be you don't need me anymore, or you need me less than you need me today. I really like that kind of therapy more. And again, I'm sure there are plenty of people who will completely disagree with me, which is fine. That's been my direct experience.
I'm in 100% agreement of that.
The thing that's helped my wife and I the most is just commitment. Definitely. I'm not going anywhere and neither are you. And so when you can have discussions and fights and, you know, and disagreements, but both agree we're going to go to bed angry because I'll see you tomorrow, it just takes a lot of the drama out of it. Like, there's no threat of divorce. There's no like, oh, but if we can't resolve this issue, that's it. I guess our marriage is over. It's like, no, it'll be fine. We'll work it out.
That in itself is a huge, especially in today's day and age. It's so easy to get divorced. And we're in a world where we've got these yeah. devices that give us this illusion of infinite choice of, oh, the grass is greener. And look how many potential greener grasses there are out there on the tap of a button. But, you know, the more families, in particular men, can lead the charge of saying like, this is not going anywhere. So even if you might be listening to that, there's someone could be watching or listening right now going, well, my wife threatens it all the time. Maybe you've never threatened it, but she does. Your men, like your opportunity in that moment is to be the solid rock that says, that's not going to happen. We're going to get through this. It's okay.
Yeah.
We're going to work it out. Because the mistake that I made and many men make is when they hear a woman say something like that, they take it as a man saying, decision is final.
Right.
Instead of actually going, hey, she's feeling some really hard stuff right now, and it feels really, yeah. really true. We're not taking anything away from it. But it's not saying it's done, dusted. You can stay solid and say, no, we're going to work through this. You can be like, we're going to find it out. And that can look like very different things for many different people. But I think it's really important. The idea, if you can change, if you're struggling in your relationship right now, if you can just change a little flick of the switch in your head to be like, I am all in. I am committed that even no matter how hard it gets, we will get through it. We will find the answer. And my job is to help steer us as a couple through it. I'm a believer that more relationships and families will stay together. So I love that
yeah,
you brought that up.
I think the men out there, you know, husbands, like you don't have total control over the other person. And I've seen situations, sadly, where I've known couples and certainly, you never know anything, but certainly from the outside looking in, everybody who was aware of the situation, the man was doing everything that he could do, and just his wife wasn't having it, and it sadly ended in a divorce. Those are edge cases in my experience. And again, I unfortunately have walked with a number of friends through this, you know, through these kinds of things. What is more likely the case is husbands stop loving their wives in the way that their wives want to be loved. And they don't realize that certainly over the course of a marriage, certainly when kids show up, what it means to love your wife is fundamentally different at different stages of the marriage. And it is your job, men, to figure out what that is. And your whole thing, well, I wish she would just tell me. Well, a couple things. One, she doesn't always know either. Number two, it is your joy to get to figure this out. That is the game. That is the romance. Like, what are the, and I don't just mean sex. Okay. If that's what you think that I'm talking about, you're missing the freaking point. Okay. It is your job to figure out what does it mean to love my wife at this particular stage in our relationship? How does she want to be loved? Men are really good at giving respect. They're really great at giving respect. We suck at love. Women typically, and this is a gross generalization, I'm sure I'm going to get accused of sexism. Still right. Just am. But women in general are better at giving love than they are at giving respect. It's why men can get in a fight and they're buddy-buddy afterwards, right? Because there was a mutual respect there. That's why, biblically speaking, like men, you're encouraged to love your wife. Wives are encouraged to respect the husband because we're both told to do the things we don't do naturally. What I found is when I'm loving my wife the way that she wants to be loved, respect just pours. Like it comes forth. Like it's fine. It's easy. And so I'm not saying that to men, it's all up to you. Like it's solely your responsibility and you can completely drive absolutely everything. I wouldn't put it that far, but I do think that you have far more responsibility and the ability to lead more than you might be giving yourself credit for. And so if you will just say, I'm just going to make it my mission to figure out how do I love my wife? And I'm going to do this over the course of days, weeks, months, years until I figure it out. And it's going to be hard. It's going to be frustrating. I'm going to get pissed off, but I'm going to wake up the next morning and try to do it better again. You'll be shocked at how happy of a marriage you wind up having and how much love you feel coming back, you know, your way. If you make it, well, I'm not going to do that for her until she does that for me. Yeah, you're going to have a really, really, really tough go at a relationship. And you're probably going to need to go to therapy and have that therapist tell you more or less what I just told you. So there's some free therapy advice.
Ryan Dice, therapist right there. Thank you very much. this ties back to business, right? Like my experience has been if there's problems in the relationship, there's problems in business.
Yeah.
Business, you can have problems there and you can, in my experience, you can have a solid, safe relationship. But if the relationship's rocky, it's going to impact business. Yeah. So if we swing back over to business, I love this conversation, not gone anywhere where I thought it would be, but it's better. But I want to make sure we also leave the guys with some super practical, what do I do in my business? You've said so much on the relationship and just being a better dad and thinking about your priorities. So if we go, okay, my business is consuming me right now. I am back where Ryan Dice was. I'm drowning in this thing and I'm really not seeing my kids. What do I do in my business? Where do I start?
Yeah. So let's start. First of all, let's start with the constraint. Let's decide if I told you effective immediately, you can only work 20 hours a week. That's all you got. 20 hours a week. What would you do in those 20 hours? And I like 20 hours because it kind of strikes a balance. You know, you got the Tim Ferriss 4-hour work week people. That's like laptop lifestyle kind of thing that I've never actually really seen work at scale. Like I love competing in a market with other 4-hour work week type people, especially if they don't have a team. It's different. If you have a team and an infrastructure around you all day long, you can work 1 hour or no hours. I'm talking about the solo entrepreneur who thinks they can have a laptop lifestyle. Nomadic can only work, 4 hours. I'm not saying it can't be done, but at scale, when you're competing with other people at scale, you're just going to get beat. On the other end of the spectrum, you've got the hustle and grind like Gary Vaynerchuk. You need to be working 100 hours unless it's 120 because that's what it's going to take to get it done. Both of these extremes, as extremes are, they're incredibly popular. They're very, interesting and compelling. They're not helpful. Where most people land now then is that 40 to 60 hour work week because that's the average wage earner. But if you were to say, yeah, but I shouldn't be doing that because again, I should be the least important person in my company or at least pursuing that, then I should only be needed about half as much. Start from that frame. Now, let me give you another frame. As the entrepreneur, as the founder, as the CEO, the type of output that you should be producing is dense. Think about it as like chocolate cake versus cotton candy. You could basically eat cotton candy indefinitely and never get full because it's just kind of fluffy type stuff. And that is the work that a lot of people do. But then there's cotton and then there's chocolate cake work. Now, chocolate cake, you may love chocolate cake, but you can only eat so much chocolate cake before you're sick. And for most of us founders, entrepreneurs, creatives, that is the type of work that we do. And so we're coming up with ideas faster than we can implement and faster than our team can implement. We do the high leverage chocolate cake kind of stuff. So again, I'm giving you permission just to say, I don't need to work as much. You just don't have to. You don't need to, and you don't have to. It's not necessary. You're different. So I want to just start from that perspective because you got to believe that for the next part to be true. Now, if we're going to start from that assumption that I don't have to work as much, what is the work that truly only you can do? And the best way to do this, like when I'm doing this for myself and I do this every quarter, is I do a complete task list brain dump. What's everything on my to-do list? Everything in my calendar, the meetings that I'm in, the projects that I'm doing, and I just do a brain dump. And I begin to categorize these. And I draw a matrix, and it's based on, like, you know, impact. So high impact items is on that Y, and ability, how good am I, is on the X axis. So high impact, high ability, that's my flow zone. That's my genius zone. The things that fall into that category, I'm going to continue doing. The things that are high impact, but low ability, I suck at it, or I don't like doing it. That is what I, as quickly as possible, want to document and delegate. Right. And I'll promise you there are those things that you think only you can do because it's important. But in reality, somebody else not only could be doing it, but they should be doing it. You also have a lot of high ability, low impact tasks. These are your menial tasks. Those are the things that you want to get off your plate as quickly as possible, whether you are delegating those to people on your team, hiring a virtual assistant. But typically, if they're truly low ability tasks, like, or low impact task, you don't need to just, it doesn't require a lot of documentation to hand off. Just tell somebody that it's their job now. And then there's the low impact, low ability task. Just stop doing those things. Run a test stop. What happens if I stop doing this? I don't like doing it. I'm not very good at it. The impact is low. So that is where the process begins. Now, the trap zone is the high impact, low ability zone. That is the captive zone. Those are the things, because you're like, it's really, really, really important. And because it's important, what we decide is no one can do it as well as you can. That's rarely the case. So what I like to do is whatever that task is that I'm doing, and almost always it's related to either, if it's a service-based business, the getting of clients or the serving of clients, right? It's some process related to, I'm the one who needs to go out there and get the clients, and I'm the one who needs to go and serve the clients. But what we fail to realize sometimes is that the getting of the clients and the serving of clients is not one thing. It's a series of things. So the very first task that I have all of our clients do, all of our portfolio companies do, is I say, we're going to map. We're going to create a flow chart of, let's start with how clients happen. So how do they become aware of you? How do you create awareness? Oh, well, we run ads. Okay, great. You know, then what happens? Well, then they go to this landing page and they, you know, watch this video. Great. Then what happens? Well, then they fill out this form to request a meeting. Great. Then what happens? Well, then we have, you get the whole thing. Like, any of us could map this, and you've seen me do this before, but I just use a whiteboard and sticky notes. And I just say, like, where does it begin? Okay. Then what happens? Then what? Then what? Then what? All of the little then what's get their own sticky notes all the way until the sale is made. Once that's done, I then want to have a visualized flow chart of how we fulfill a client. So now what I've done is I've broken down the system of getting clients and the system of serving clients into a series of steps. Now I can audit that and I can say, which of these steps are high impact, high ability? I'll keep those for now. Which of the steps are low impact, low ability? We can maybe stop doing them, or I can definitely get somebody else to do those. Which are the low impact, high ability? I'm good at, but anybody could be good at. Let's hand those off. But again, the trap zone, high impact, low ability. That is the first set of items that you need to hand off.
How do we know it's a low ability? Because as you say, it's the trap where they'll tell themselves, no one can do it as well as I can. So the presupposition there is that they don't know that someone could do it better than them, right? They're lower. They think they've got a high ability in that area. And I'm 100% in agreement with you, 100%. Like,
yeah,
you think you no one will do it as better. And there are some things that's probably true. But I also am the believer, if I can have someone doing it at 50, 60, 70, 80% of what I can, and I'm not doing it, and I can do it at scale because of them, that's better than 100% quality of me doing it in a very small period of time. But how do we identify, like, if someone going, well, no one can do it as good as I can, how do they start to realize that actually maybe that's not true? What would you say to someone?
So I think that's where you're going back to what I said before, you have to operate under the assumption that you're just not that valuable. Like, you have to just kill that limiting belief and say, the world is a big place, I'm good, but so are lots of people. And if you truly believe that the thing that you do is better than everybody else, then you need to realize you got an ego that perhaps needs to be put in check. So let's shift that belief from, I don't know anybody who can do this as well as me. That may be a true statement, but I don't know anybody who can do this as well as me is a fundamentally different belief structure than no one can do this as well as me. And if you will make that simple shift and say, I don't know anyone who can. Now, that is kind of the first step to enlightenment, if you will. Now, you asked the important question before, how do I know if it's low ability? Just because you're able to do something doesn't mean that it's a high ability flow state task, right? For it to be a high ability flow state task, it means it is intrinsically rewarding, meaning you derive enjoyment just from the doing of the task. So you don't necessarily get enjoyment because, oh, I'm so glad that it is done, right? You get enjoyment from the fact that I'm doing it. Let me give you an example. There are people who just genuinely enjoy exercising. I don't understand these people. Now, I do exercise, and I don't exercise as much as I would like to because I don't enjoy the process of exercising. Now, I've exercised for a very long time. I've tried every different form of exercise. I don't freaking like it. I do, however, know people who genuinely enjoy it. So for them, exercise is a flow state task. And guess what? If you look at both of us, we look different. Okay? We just freaking look different because for them, it's a flow state task than for me. Now, do I have the ability to lift? Sure. Do I understand how to put together a workout routine? Definitely. Do I know where the gym is and can I get myself there? Of course I can. For it to be true high ability flow state tasks, you derive pleasure from the doing of the thing. I've got friends, man, who genuinely enjoy mowing their grass. I don't get this. One, yeah. I'm allergic to grass, so I'm sneezing my ass.
Me too. I'm allergic to grass too.
Yeah, but dude, it just freaking sucks. Like, I'm living in Texas, man. It's 100 billion degrees outside, and they're just loving it. They're like, yeah, it's just the white noise and this. Fine, you can have it. That for them is high ability. So ability is not simply I can do it. It's that I derive pleasure from the doing of the thing. Those things you keep. Everything else, we want to set a goal to hand it off. Now, you're saying, yeah, but nobody can do it as well as me. Shift that. I don't know anybody who can do it as well as me. Here's the other piece. Oftentimes when we say nobody can do it as well as me, what we're thinking about is the entirety of the system, the entirety of the doing of the thing, whether it's the getting the client, the serving of the client, or all of the above. But when we begin to break it down into its component tasks, what we actually realize is, yeah, nobody can do all of this as well as I can, but surely to God, somebody can do this part better than me. I mean, I'm pretty good at like public speaking and I enjoy going out there and doing public speaking, but I don't necessarily enjoy the follow-up afterwards of the leads that come in. I bet I can get somebody to do that. And, you know, when new leads come in, I don't mind doing the initial onboarding, but I don't particularly like doing the sales call. I mean, I can do it, but I bet I can have a salesperson. You know, every time I get on the phone with a prospect, I wind up underpricing. I bet if I got a salesperson, I just said, this is what it costs, they'd sell as well as me and would actually charge what I'm worth. So when we begin to break it down into its component parts, then we can say, ooh, this particular thing here. And again, I use sticky notes in a whiteboard when I'm doing this. So I say, this sticky note right here, this one's mine for now. All these other ones, I want to live in a reality where somebody else could do it as good or better than me. Once you define the task, once you build playbooks, checklists, step-by-step videos of you doing it, now you can begin to hire people. Our mutual friend, Dan Martell, says 80% is 100%. I agree with that. I would also say that two people doing it at 80% is 160%. So it's even better. So I don't worry about somebody doing it a little bit worse than me, because if it ain't me, I can get two because I'll always be one. And so that's my thinking and that's my goal. Now, I'll make one other point and then I'll shut up because I know I'm monologuing. The growth looks like delegating your weaknesses. So growth looks like delegating the, you know, low impact, low ability, delegating the high ability to a certain extent, low impact. And it looks like the high impact, low ability. Growth is when you delegate your weaknesses. Scale is when you begin to delegate your strengths. So what you perceive as a flow state task today, if your business is growing and if you're growing as a person, probably won't be a flow state task in 3 to 5 years. And so being willing to, again, die to that professional identity, I still very much identify as a marketer. Dude, I don't have a login to our Meta account. I don't write emails for most of the company, even if it's come from my name. I don't do marketing anymore. I had to die to that if the company was going to scale and if I was going to grow. So that's how, that's kind of hopefully some tactical suggestions in there of how to go about doing this process.
Oh, so much in there, so much valuable. I think this is a good one. I've got one real question I really want to get your perspective on. And then I reckon we might land this plane. But all of this idea of building team, and we touched on it a little bit ago, is, well, there are people who are scared to build team because managing team, maybe their low ability is managing people, right? Maybe they're like, actually, I'm a really good visionary, good leader, but I suck at managing people. So when you've got these ideas, especially now with the rise of AI, it's like there's going to be supposedly the first $1 billion company that is one person with a bunch of AI versus what you and I have just been talking about, hiring and building team. How do you think about or talk to those people who are like, I just want to stay small. I don't want to grow. What do you say to them?
So what I say is, as an entrepreneur, you can do whatever the heck you want to do. If you never want your company to get above a certain amount, that's your choice. And I'm never going to tell somebody that they have to scale. But if they say, I want to stay small, I'm going to ask why. And very often, to your point, it's, you know, I don't feel like I need to build a big team. You know, I just want it to be simple. Okay, let's check some of our beliefs on that. If given the option to make more money or less, would you rather make more or less? Only about 100% of everybody's going to say more. Okay, to make more, your company's going to probably need to be bigger, right? Right. Okay, cool. And that might require you to build a team, right? At some point, right? Okay, so at some point, bigger team, more money. You would like to have more money, right? Yeah, I would. Okay, what about the impact that you want to make as a business? Let's go back to that argument. Would you rather have a bigger impact or a smaller impact? Almost nobody's going to say, yeah, no, I want my impact to be as small as it possibly can be. Now, everybody would like to impact more lives, right? Okay, cool. What about your personal time and freedom? Do you believe that you personally have more time and freedom when you, if you were to have a team or not? Now we get into true belief. Oh no, I mean, if I had a team, then I'd be spending all of this time managing them. If we had this team, then I would be stuck in meetings all day long. Oh, okay. So the problem isn't actually with the team, it's with the false beliefs around what a team is and what a team means. Because the reality is, and what I'll try to say to people is, in my life, the reason I'm able to take a month off and know that everything is fine is because I have a team. And if I didn't have a team and it was dependent upon me, I couldn't take a month off. I would have to take my laptop. I have to always be on. The reason I have true freedom is because there's other people who work for me who are doing the things that so I don't have to do them. So if you want more income, wealth, if you want more impact, and truly, if you want more time and freedom, then you need some help. Now, there's a right way and a wrong way to do it, but you said what I hear a lot of people say. I'm more of a visionary. I'm more of this. I suck at building teams. I suck at managing people. And I always want to push back on them and say, stop saying you suck at it and simply say, I don't know how yet. And this is where I say to grow, like to grow, you hand off your weaknesses. To scale, you hand off your strengths. So maybe what it looks like is you beginning to hand off your strengths so that you can have the time and capacity to develop the new skill that is team building and leadership, right? So all of these are skills that can be developed, but if you decide ahead of time that you don't want it under a false belief, if you further decide that you can't do it under a false belief, that you're not this, then you're right. You'll never do it. But if instead we check our beliefs, then and we open ourselves to acknowledging like, yeah, no, I just don't know how to do it today. And that's okay. I can learn. That does require where we kind of start off this discussion, that requires a bit of humility. It requires saying like, yeah, I don't freaking know how to do this, but I bet I can figure it out. I'm a pretty smart person. And now you have a framework for how to do it. Those things that are your strengths that you call high impact today, you need to determine, you know what, this isn't actually as high an impact thing. I need to shift it down and hand it off to somebody else. I thought it was really important for me to write every single one of these emails, but you know what? If I'm going to grow, somebody else needs to do it. I'm going to hand that off. I thought it was important for me to be at every single event, but you know what? I don't want to travel that much. I need to have somebody else do it. And maybe they're not as good as me, but and so as we begin to die to those things, it works. But I will tell you specifically on team and specifically as it relates to AI, there may come a day where AI and robots are doing all this stuff for us. We're simply not there today. Today, the single highest leverage force that exists in business is a well-trained, well-equipped human being who gives a damn. And the mistake that most entrepreneurs make is we hire ahead of systems. If you do what I told you to do before, so map what we refer to as your value engine. What is that process flow? Visualize how clients happen. Visualize how clients are served. Document the different steps and stages. That is creating a system before the person. I also believe that good people don't fix broken systems. Broken systems break good people. So we want to solve for systems first. Then we get the people to run the systems. We get that out of order and we wonder why people kept failing. Okay. So solve for the systems first, hire the people to run the system. Then what you find is there's all this stuff around like, oh, only hire A players, this and that. My goal is not to build a team of A players and rock stars. My goal is to build a company that doesn't require them. My goal is to build a company that has such strong systems that we can bring in people who can run those systems. Now, paradoxically, companies that have really great systems are successful. And successful companies with great systems, you know who they wind up attracting? A players and rock stars. So if you solve for systems, you wind up getting all of the other things. So I'll tell you, if you will just double down on systems, I'm going to visualize how this thing happens. I'm going to drill into the individual and document those steps. I'm going to begin to hand these things off and update it. That's where freedom comes from. And now when you begin to hand these off to people who you see doing those things that you believe nobody else could do as well as you, do it actually better than you, if you got the right mindset, you're going to feel so incredibly free. And when those people begin improving upon the systems and teaching other people, then why are you there? You're now officially, congratulations, the least valuable person in your company. You just own the damn thing.
And that's better than that? For many people, right? That's the dream. I'm so glad you touched on the whole A-grade players versus systems approach. It's an argument that's always an interesting one. So to get your take on that, Ryan, I really appreciate you, man. This has been an awesome conversation. We could literally keep chatting. And I know you didn't have a hard stop, but I do want us to wrap here. One thing I want to point out to listeners and viewers that if you haven't already grabbed a copy of Ryan's new book, you can find that. Get Scalable. It's on Audible. It's on Kindle. It's in bookstores. So you should definitely get that. And it takes you through exactly what Ryan was just talking about there. So if you haven't, go and grab that. Ryan, if they want to find out more about you, scalable.co, as we mentioned at the beginning, is there anything else or anywhere else you recommend that they connect with you?
Yeah, I'm posting now like crazy on YouTube. I hadn't done anything on YouTube for years and years and years. And posting regularly now and having a lot of fun doing it. It's become flow state work for me. I don't know if it'll happen forever, but I really am enjoying just putting ideas out there. And what I'm largely doing, and I did this with the book. So at the Scalable Company, we don't sell courses and things like that. We work one-on-one with clients to build out their operating systems. Because for us, that's a way to learn more about the businesses and see if it's a good investment opportunity. We're essentially getting paid to do due diligence. Now, after that, we've got, you know, ongoing masterminds and things like that. But because we don't sell courses, because I'm not in the training business, which is weird for me because digital marketer, that's all it was, right? I'm in this like fun, freeing space where I love teaching and I love training, but it used to always have to be behind a paywall, a digital marketer. Well, now with Scalable, because the business model is not sell trainings, I can create trainings to just give them away for free to everybody because that's not the business that we're in. And so Ryan Dice Official is my YouTube channel, and it's growing really, really well, like really quickly. I mean, added like almost 20,000 subscribers in, you know, in 60 days. So
wow, that's amazing.
Market seems to like it. And all I'm doing is teaching the same exact things that I would have in the past sold as a course. So I'll tell you, if you just want a bunch of free stuff, there you go. But yeah, the book is the step-by-step manual for how we go about building and installing these operating systems and, you know, and getting free in our business. So if you got $20 and that would probably be that and the YouTube channel, you're good. You probably never need to give me any more money ever again.
Yeah. And then, but the reality is that it's possible you'll go through that and go, oh, I'd really like a bit of extra help. And so if that's the case, you can head over to scalable.co and book a call and have a chat. Thank you so much for your time. This has been an absolute pleasure. Listeners, viewers, If you missed anything and you're like scrambling to figure out what was that thing said, you can find all the show notes, all the details, transcripts over at rising.show. Reminder, that's .show, not .com. So rising.show. Ryan, thank you so much. And until next time, guys, keep up the journey.
Hey, fellow dadpreneur, thanks for tuning in to today's episode. If you've missed something said on today's episode, you can find transcripts, links, and other notes from today's episode, as well as all other episodes over at rising.show. That's .show, not .com. So head over to rising.show to get all the information that you need.
This episode was brought to you by Automation Agency. If you're sick of Fiverr and Upwork and you want a reliable team of experts who can turn your marketing ideas into marketing duns, then head over to automationagency.com and check out what they can do. Whether it's graphic design tasks for social media, tech tasks like building funnels and email automations, or content creation tasks like copywriting and video editing, Automation Agency is the one team you need to help you market your business and free up your time to focus on more important things. That's automationagency.com, and go and check it out. Check them out.